one kind of interviewing that you can do. Another one is to do an in-depth study of a particular event. And sometimes when you're doing this, it's good to interview more than one person and get different interpretations of an event. For example, one of the things I looked at was the process within the woodworkers union of when the union split from the international, and I was interested in seeing what role women played in that and what women thought of that. And so I interviewed women on both sides of that split. Like, that's a really simple example where it's clear there's going to be really different opinions about what was good for women and what was taking place, right? But you can also sit down with one person and do that same kind of in-depth study of an issue or an event by spending enough time with them to keep going through the memories and going into more depth. And I think you'll find when you interview that as you become relaxed with people and they become relaxed with you, that they start to tell you much more information and reveal things they wouldn't otherwise, which you have to be very careful with. And as you develop a kind of friendship actually when you interview people, I think a kind of rapport. And people start to remember things that they haven't thought about literally for years. And then once that process begins, if you keep asking questions and pushing, the memories just go deeper and deeper and deeper. And like, there's this one book that was done about a local of the United Auto Workers in the States and the process of it organizing and winning the first contract, that's totally based on just this one guy who was the union president on his memories. But it's something like, which you won't do this kind of in-depth stuff with, but like 6 months of steady interviewing and of going over the same questions. And it's just an incredible picture. Like, he literally remembers. He at first forgets, but then over time he begins to remember names and processes and who had power and the various groups within the social scene in the union and how they felt about organizing. So that's another kind of interview. Okay, so where to go from here? When I did my interviews, I worked out a kind of standard interview format, and I brought two for you to look at today, both of which are studies of union women, one of which was done in the States, which is this small, tight, hard-to-read one, and this one, which is mine, and I'll pass them around so you can look at them, spend a moment looking at them. And I think both of them try and look at both women's experience as people who are, you know, located within their household, wives, mothers, and so on, and also look at their experience as workers, try and get concrete information about working conditions, why women joined unions, how they got support to be active within the union movement, things that really were important to them in their workplace situation that they wanted to change. The attitudes they experienced as working women from society and from fellow workers, sister workers, how they saw themselves as similar or different to other women they were working with. That's always very interesting to talk to women who are, let's say, in leadership positions around. The effect of their family responsibilities on their ability to be active in their union. Their perspective on key debates going on within the union movement at a particular time. I think one of the things that we'll do next week is to actually, like, what I'd like you to do this week is to think about if you know someone in your union or in your community or who you're in contact with in your family who you think you'd like to interview. And the kind of material I think we want to get is either women who were union activists or women who would have clear memories of what it was like to fight for other issues for women or to work in a particular job situation. Because I think that's the kind of material that it would be good to pull out of our interview. And think about this person. Think about what you know about their history, if you know anything about them. think about why you want to interview them, because that will help you to develop some kind of format. Think about if you don't know a person, whether there's a strike or an issue in terms of trade unionism that you're particularly concerned about, that you'd like to explore, and then maybe we can figure out how to find people around that issue. Because I've done a lot of that, tracking out people who are concerned around some particular struggle in the union movement. Or, for example, something like if you want to explore what it's like for women to be shop stewards, and talk to a couple of women who you've known who have been maybe not super active in your union but have been shop stewards for a long time. That's the kind of interview I think that would be really a good experience for us to do. And then the next stage would be to, if possible, to do some research to look at whether there's any material in the casebook that would help you to put questions together, anything in the bibliography that you want to read, get your hands on, that would help you with background. Think about whether there's any material in the Sun or the Province that would be useful for you. And if you have questions about background research, then you can ask me, right? We'll spend some time next week talking about how to find that kind of material to prepare for your interview with the person and to figure out questions. And the next stages then will be to figure out a final interview format, to make contact with the person and set up the interview, and then we'll spend some time talking about how to do an interview, right? How to make it comfortable, how to create some kind of credibility around yourself as an interviewer, how to listen to people, how to ask questions which aren't leading questions but get you answers, and how to make how to get people to talk to you without shining lights in their faces. And then after that, we'll talk a bit about transcription, like at a later stage, like how to either write it out or type it out and how to edit it. Okay. So there's been a lot of sort of theoretical debate amongst historians about oral history. Like a lot of traditional historians are really hostile to people who do oral history because they basically, I think it's elitism, like they basically don't think that ordinary people have much to contribute on what goes on in daily life. And also because that whole issue of how personal the stories are and how they're so much one person's opinion on what took place. It's really funny because traditional historians will take a diary from a famous person they find in some archives, and they'll see that as being historical truth and quote from it endlessly, you know, and that's reality. But when you present them with an oral history tape from a woman who's worked in a fish plant, that doesn't have any validity in terms of a historical document. So I think one of the things that doing oral history does is to try and sort of break through that kind of myth. And one of the reasons it's important, if you can, to do a little bit of background research is that people's memories, that we talked about this a bit before, is inaccurate. Like, it's very non-linear. You'll find memory is very non-linear, that people will not have time sequences in place, and they won't always have relationships between events clear. But it's very deep in terms of particular things that are important to people. There's three ways to do that. Like, one is to cross-ask questions. Like, when I'm trying to establish when things happened or really clear facts about, let's say, a strike, I'll ask questions about it several times in the course of a fairly long interview, and I'll ask questions posed differently. And then I'll also do things like say, well, I interviewed someone who went to that strike, and they say that the real problem was that the leadership was afraid to keep the strike going for these reasons. Do you think that's true? And then have a person respond to someone else's opinion, right? And I think there's ways of cross-checking the factual information. The other thing is to interview more than one person, like to do, and this is something that people doing sort of academic oral history do a lot now, is they do a lot of interviews around one event, and then they begin to, they make charts. I mean, I have charts of people's answers around questions, right, and start and cross-compare them, right? And then the third thing that is to frame your oral history with primary research, so like union minutes, papers and so on, to establish basic facts like time sequences and so on around events, and then to say that what you're doing with the person's interpretation is that you're giving an interpretation of the event, like to put the oral history in that kind of framework. So I think there's different ways of approaching that problem.
Kelly, were you?
Yeah, as when you're doing an interview, so there's a danger of asking the leading question. So if a person is getting a date on the spouse, that saying that you just said that you would ask the question again, or you would say that I was the person that makes the gap, like that you have the reach.
Okay, I think the second question is an opinion question. It's like you're trying to get someone's opinion on something, and you're trying to bounce it off another opinion. And you're trying to establish, I think, in that situation whether or not they've got a bias. And you find out that they do, right? A leading question, I think, is to say, women were discriminated against in your union, weren't they?
Instead of waiting for that,
right. But you see, what would happen is if you said women were discriminated against in your union, weren't they? The woman might say, "Yes, they were." Gee, I never thought of that. Yes, they were. Whereas if you ask things like, "Did women? How many women were on the union executive?" What were leadership opinions towards women becoming top executive members of the union? Did the union assist women? And, you know, like you start to generate the material that allows you to do that. And then you can say,
you know, anyone that was fired.
Yeah, and then you can say, was there any discrimination in your union towards women? And then you'd also ask, did women get support from the union? Like you'd ask both questions, right? And that way you'd start to get balanced answers around that. But it's mostly like when you make a statement and then you want them to respond to that. Yeah, that interview. I have something to read to you about that, actually, in terms of, I'm not going to read you the whole thing, it's a paper I gave to these oral historians to try and get them to understand why women's experience was somewhat different, but domestic responsibilities played a large part in women's lives as daughters, mothers, and wives. To be a union activist meant that your children had to be above a certain age or that you were childless. Thus, women's careers as unionists tended to be interspersed with child raising, and this was true of their experience in the workforce as well, placing distinct limits on their ability to become leaders within the union. So you begin to realize that women do have a different concept of time, and that that whole thing of child raising as a way of dating, you know, your life experience and marriage is very common for women, and also a way of sort of looking at workplace involvement. Women's sense of historical process tends to be far less linear than their male counterparts. That is, women were less able to recall a blow-by-blow, step-by-step set of events in a strike, but very clear about the many layers of power dynamics or organizational details in a specific process. This is in part, I'm convinced, because women carried a lot of the organizational work and the emotional work as stewards. In fact, women were often attracted to unionism because of the advocacy role that they could play and found self-empowering. So I think as you interview, you'll find that there is a different kind of time sense from the women. You know. Okay, so are there more questions about that? I'm going to try next week to bring in tape recorders and microphones and to go through the buttons you push and so on. And maybe some of you will be ready to start to take the recorders out, actually, and start interviewing. I thought maybe we could take turns doing interviews. Maybe half the class do a set and then the other half do it. And listen to some of them as they're generated and see, you know, how it's going, basically. But I thought from now on we'd talk a little bit about oral history in each seminar and prepare our interview questions and listen to the material as it comes in and then start to talk about editing. Because I think it would be great if by the end of the course we could actually get the book out that labor history is going to be published. Okay. Next week, we're going to talk about women in unemployed organizing, and the only thing that I think needs to be read, actually, is number 8, Jobless March on Victoria, from The Level. So does someone want to volunteer to present that? Great. Is there anything that anyone wants to say about any of the stuff we've talked about today?